From Seeing Through Film Thomas Flight, Eddington's Americana Lunacy Cannes Week 1. This is part 1 of my coverage of the Cannes Film Festival 2025. You can read part 2 here, or watch my video coverage on my channel. Excuse me, she said, approaching our circle of critics cautiously. Are you from the States? It was apparently the New Yorker tote that gave it away. She wanted to know what someone from the US thought of what we had just watched, the premiere of Ari Aster's Eddington. The maximalist panic attack reflection of COVID-era insanity, which feels like a kind of deranged Americana, is riddled with the tiny details that make American life feel like an absurdist dark comedy at times. I had wondered during the screening how the mostly European audience was perceiving the film, and now we were being asked as Americans for our perspective. The general consensus, it felt unfortunately real. That's not to say Eddington, which premiered last night at the Cannes Film Festival and which comes out in the US in July, isn't over the top or surreal in ways. But I did find myself facing the uncomfortable reality that as absurd as the movies is, it's not that unrealistic, at least not by the standards of the last 5 years in America. And that seems to be Ari Aster's objective here if he has one to hold a mirror up to American absurdism and makes us all look at ourselves. The circle of critics I was standing in was somewhat split. Many, myself among them, found a cathartic entertainment in this funhouse mirror, but a few felt it lacked substance beyond that. It's certainly a film that will be no less polarizing as it reaches wider audiences. But how could a depiction of American life in 2020 not be? Isn't that part of the absurdity? That any depiction of our own recent reality polarizes us. Eddington was my 7th screening, capping off my 4th night at Cannes. Below you'll find my full review along with my recap of everything else I watched in the first week here of the Cannes Film Festival. Power struggles, whether they're against patriarchy or the state or within a society, have been the pervasive theme within all the films I've seen at Cannes so far. When the movies have deviated from this theme, it's to instead face and confront death. All this to say, it's been a frolic. Perhaps these themes reflect the interests of the selection committee at Cannes, but I suspect just as much it reflects the current preoccupations of the artists making the films. Socially and globally, we're at a place of renewed destabilization. While things have never been perfect, far from it, some of the assumed promises of modernism, neoliberalism, and inevitable progress towards greater freedom are being forced into question. Much of the art cinema I see these days, not just at Cannes, feels like it's grappling with these big questions and trying to understand our place within this shifting landscape. Special screening / Dyer M. Stislav Chernov / Ukraine. I got into the fest and picked up my badge just in time to slip into a special screening of M. Stislav Chernov's new documentary, 2000 Meters to Andreeva. His previous film, 20 Days in Mariupol, which won Best Documentary that year at the Oscars, is a harrowing and insightful documentary that covers the early days of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The last time I was at Cannes in 2022, the invasion had just begun, so to return years later and begin the fest with Chernov's second film about the conflict drives home just how protracted this war has been. His new film tracks a specific operation within Ukraine's difficult 2023 counteroffensive, and it gives us a glimpse of modern warfare in a way no piece of media I've seen has before. It operates effectively on several levels. It's a harrowing depiction of the hellish intensity of combat, evocative of Alex Garland's recent Warfare, but instead as a documentary. As the film opens, we're immediately immersed within subjectively shot combat footage. It's the most intense capturing of real-world combat I've ever seen, and it is not for the faint of heart. There are several of these horrific combat sequences, stitched together from first-person helmet cams worn by the soldiers, and they document a few battles in the protracted struggle to claim one 2,000-meter strip of forest leading to the village of Andreeva. What elevates 2,000 meters beyond just a visceral depiction of the reality of combat is the way Chernov positioned this operation as just one event within a conflict that has been happening for thousands of years. 2,000 meters is not just a look at the fight to claim Andreeva. It's a look at the nature of why men go to war and die over pieces of land. These sequences are broken up by Mstislav's own journey following a group of soldiers through the region towards the end of the operation. Some of the film's most moving and provocative sequences are actually when the viewer and the soldiers have a break from the combat. Hiding in foxholes while shells and gunfire explode around them, they connect with a filmmaker as humans, smoking, chatting about school, their families, or what they are going to do when they get home from the front if they do. Throughout, Chernov reflects on his own role in all this, asking us to consider the role the camera plays in these conflicts. In his personal introduction to the film at Cannes, he described the documentary as his way of carrying the flag for the soldiers from the film who lost their lives. This documentary gives us a first-hand account of a small piece of the latest military conflict in Europe since World War II, and beyond being politically relevant for understanding the nature of the ongoing invasion. I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say it will likely find a place as one of the most significant war documentaries ever made. It's a kind of raising of a banner that ultimately might be more symbolic than strategically meaningful in the grand scheme of the struggle. It should be recognized not just for its documentation of these events, but for what it has to reveal about the nature of war itself, and its excellence of craft as a documentary. If you think you can handle seeing real violence, it comes highly recommended. In Competition/Dire/Masha/Shalinsky/Germany, we get impressions of life, the haunting moments where you awaken to your loneliness, the disconnect between yourself and reality, the places where there is a rift which one feels must be reconciled. There is curiosity about this, but also horror. These moments awaken in youth but are held in those with age. Around these moments lingers the specter of death, but they exist adjacent to an enveloping warmth. Sound of Falling, the second film from director Masha Shalinsky, only the first of her work that I've seen, is a multi-generational coming-of-age existential horror film, sewn through with sorrow and foreboding that lingers at the fringes before finally becoming a reality in the third act. You've heard of the male gaze. This is the death gaze. I'm writing about it with this broken and disconnected language because that is how it presents itself. In fragments, initially disjointed, the characters, places and timelines seem at first connected only by a sort of haunted resonance. They come into clearer focus by the end, but as a first-time viewer the connections still felt tenuous by as the credits rolled, perhaps more spiritual than chronological and causal. It's a beautiful film, conjuring images that feel as enchanted as often as they are disconcerting. Its structure and use of these imagery evokes Tarkovsky, while the atmospheric sound design is reminiscent of Lynch. As a technical piece of filmmaking, this was my favorite film so far, with each department working in concert to deliver a unique but aesthetically cohesive whole. Within this frame, oppression, sexual violence and awakening, objectification, unhappiness, depression, and ultimately death and the realities that might draw someone towards it as an escape from those other things are